I'm talking to Michelle Lujan Grisham, and she is running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District of New Mexico. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Susan. I'm delighted to be on the show again.
Great. We talked to you before in the primary, and now there's some other things that we need to talk about, and congratulations on winning the primary. Let's talk first of all about, let's talk about health care, because you've been talking about that a lot, and everyone is worried about the kind of onslaught against contraceptive coverage and what that'll do to women. So let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, let's take it one step back. The Affordable Care Act between the primary and the general election was upheld by the United States Supreme Court, so that's great news because it really does. It protects women's health care choices. It requires prevention. It doesn't allow gender-biased rating. It eliminates the cap, which is that's good for men and women for insurance companies, which is about $100,000. But more so for women, often childbirth was identified as a pre-existing condition, so you couldn't get private insurance. So these protections for women are critical, and now they're in place, and investments from the federal government have made their ways to states so that you can create the exchanges and begin the real work of getting people insured. On the topic of contraceptives, the Affordable Care Act has a component that requires insurance companies to cover birth control, including if those private companies or private hospitals have religious affiliations. And I have to tell you that around the country right now, there are a couple of lawsuits that have been making their way. And I think the real issue here is we're beginning to treat women in a way that's completely discriminatory. So, one, birth control or hormone therapy is something that's between a woman and her physician or her healthcare practitioner. And you take birth control for any number of reasons, not just for family planning. And so the notion that women would be denied an access of healthcare, a prescribed treatment plan, because somebody in Congress and other local policymakers have decided that they're against family planning, I think is outrageous. And also, the notion that we would let any private organization pick and choose the drugs, then what happens when the prescription therapy for Parkinson's isn't right or Alzheimer's isn't right and they decide that they're not going to provide that coverage? That's exactly how we got to the place that we are, is that private business was making healthcare choices for patients. And this act says, no, you won't, and it absolutely protects women so that they have the full cadre of support, including birth control.
Okay. Good. Another thing that's just come up is the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. The Senate passed a version that includes Native Americans and lesbian, gay, and bisexuals in the protections. The House hasn't passed that version. It's looking at a version without that. So I assume that it'll come back to the House when you're in office, if you win this election, and it'll be a fight. So where would you stand?
Oh, we are gonna fight hard to maintain all of the protections because they were hard won to start with. And I think the point that you made that very many individuals don't know about the Violence Against Women's Act, and we should be celebrating 80 years of really working hard towards protecting women and other individuals who are often victims to individuals who use power and, you know, related inappropriate relationships to really punish and create harm. But what I really want to point out is that the Native American women is crucial because on a reservation, a sovereign nation, tribes are unable to often prosecute outside of the tribe the very perpetrators of the domestic violence against their mothers, their sisters, their grandmothers, and they have to have that ability. There has to be a full range of protections both on and off the reservation. Until now, until the Senate version, that did not exist. And I'm really disappointed the House has made it more personal about the LGBT community and about about, again, birth control and family planning for women, and about really shunning the notion that we need to have protections, because it's very difficult to create safe haven for all of the individuals who have been victimized over and over over again in this country.
Okay, good. Now, you've had a lot of experience in your work in the state with Social Security and with Medicare and the importance of those. Do you feel that those programs are in danger the way the Ryan budget claims?
The Ryan budget is a disaster. I mean, it quite literally, it privatizes Social Security. It turns Medicare into a voucher program, which basically means that folks coming into Medicare would be given a core amount tied to a voucher. And once that core amount was gone, you're on your own. Imagine if you get breast cancer. Then what? And Medicare is your coverage. And for every retiree, that's basically what we're talking about. And we know nominally, without those additional health care risks, each senior citizen on Medicare will pay at least $6,000 more a year in out-of-pocket costs. Now, my mom's living on Social Security, and her Social Security is about between $1,200 and $1,300. And I can tell you that she already rations her own care because she can't afford the co-pays and to cover her personal products tied to her chronic disease. Can you imagine asking her to find $6,000 more? What it means is we're going to force people out of their homes. We're going to force them to continue to choose between health care and food, which is exactly why we passed the Affordable Care Act. Because as a nation and a society, we're not going to do that anymore. And if we take care of that, it actually lowers health care costs, which means Medicare is sustainable for a much longer period of time. So the Ryan budget isn't willing to let those investments take place, isn't willing to protect people. It's just saying, in order to have money that I want to spend, in fact, I'm going to spend it on defense and on tax cuts for the 1%, for the wealthiest of Americans. He wants to extend those and continue those tax breaks to a greater degree by cutting Medicare, privatizing Social Security, and also cutting Medicaid, which means, again, that none of those resources would be available in our local community. We lose hospitals, we lose doctors, we lose practitioners, and this community would be harmed in ways that are so significant. I'm really hoping that the voters are understanding really what's at stake in this election.
Okay. Do you think that Social Security needs to be revamped? Is it in trouble?
You know, I think the reality is that Social Security, because it's a program where someone who is in the workforce, that income is being transferred to folks who are not in the workforce, who are retired. And the problem is that's become very imbalanced. So we need to do three things. One, we need more people at work. Two, if we have productive immigration reform, we have even more people at work as we're growing this economy who are also paying into our tax and Social Security system. And I do think there may be some things that we can look at in Social Security that would be more voluntary in nature. But I think if we would right-size the economy, you can find strategies to shore up Social Security for the long haul. Because when people talk about means testing it, which for me is just as terrible as privatizing, or if we continue to increase the age requirements. Remember, it's a family benefit that serves disabled family members and children when there are survivor's benefits. It's the only way that they get through high school, and I hope someday that that benefit will be able to follow them to college. It doesn't now. So I do think there are some adjustments that need to be made, but first we need to right-size the number of people who are working, and probably we should increase the earnings cap. So after a certain, you know, about $108,000, you don't pay into the Social Security system anymore, and that doesn't make any sense. I mean, we haven't made those adjustments to keep pace with what people's earnings are and what the life history of their work is anymore. Those are necessary, positive things that we can do to Social Security that protect it, don't diminish it.
Okay. The Lilly Ledbetter Act was passed. That was one of the first. That was the first thing that Obama signed, I think. But now there is a Paycheck Fairness Act that is in the works, and it would go further. It would help women further to be able to make equal pay. How would you stand on that?
I would fight hard to pass it. In fact, Susan, I was at an event last night, and I used a cartoon at the event to show all these superheroes doing great things, and all the male superheroes are at a dollar, and Wonder Woman's at 77 cents. The reality is women still make less. And we have to do everything in our power to reduce and eliminate discrimination and to create an opportunity for women, particularly now. We have a growing number of women as single heads of household. Those single heads of household are supporting their children. I'm in a situation where I'm a caregiver, supporting my mother. We live longer. Those resources are critical to our financial, both short-term and long-term security. Not the least of which, in addition to that, is we have more women in graduate school and more women who are owning businesses and more women who are growing into specialized fields, and the notion that they don't have the same opportunities that their male counterparts do is flat out discrimination, and we have to stamp it out. So you bet, I'm going to be a real champion in the House for all of these causes so that we've got equality. I mean, that's how Congress and the government should be behaving, is that we ought to be promoting and creating equality in this country. That's what makes us strong.
Okay. Do you want to go on and talk about paid sick leave and family medical leave? There are proposals for that, too.
Well, you know, when I was the Secretary of Health, I did the maximum. So, you know, you only have to provide job protections under the current law for about 3 months in paid medical leave. And I worked really hard to make sure, and that is the law, that it was available for both genders, that it was very clear, particularly for maternity leave, that we would create opportunities for job protection, part-time paid work, so that you can get back into those jobs but support your family but not lose all that income. We also worked on daycare, worked on if there were extended catastrophic illnesses, that we could make policies at the state government that would extend that family medical leave. And that's where we need to go in this country, that we've really set the minimum, not the maximum, and so many people are caught. The other issue really is to create an environment, and I hope we'll see more of that, where if we're using public health and community clinics, part of the reason that family medical leave is so important is people don't have immediate access to any of their health care providers. So we're dealing with the sicker population. By the time that you get treated, you're in the hospital. It requires surgery. None of that prevention occurs. So until we get the health care system in this country right size, we have to protect people's jobs when there is an illness. Because when we don't do that, we're basically saying it's okay with us that you lose everything. And half of all bankruptcies without family medical leave protections are all tied in this country to health care costs.
When we talked in the primary, we talked about you being able to work with various people and bring them together to get something done. But now, in the atmosphere that we're seeing, it seems as though being able to stand up for what you believe in is more important for the women, anyway, of New Mexico.
Well, I want to be a champion and an advocate, right? I don't want to be just a reliable vote. I want to lead those fights and lead those efforts. But I do want to take a step back and say, use this example. I was also in San Francisco recently, and I got to hear a terrific presentation by Senator Barbara Boxer, and she was very concerned and identified that she's been working for years on a large transportation bill for California that, of course, all of when we're working on the interstates, these affect all the states, and we need more transportation and infrastructure money invested. But that bill never made it through because at the 11th hour, extremists, conservatives in the Senate added on a birth control and family planning prohibition. So the bill died. So we're going to have to fight at every turn to prevent those actions. But by the same token, then that transportation bill did not get passed. I really want to create coalitions with reasonable, thoughtful individuals in Congress and in the Senate who are clear about who they work for and what's really at stake, and to get them to step away from some of those conservative party platforms that have nothing to do with protecting women and equality. But in the face of that not being available, you have to fight to prevent any of those, the birth control limitations, family planning, any of the discriminatory actions that are clearly aimed at women. None of those can get through the Senate or the House. And we've got to have members who are going to stand strong and make sure that that can happen.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be interviewed by you again. I appreciate the work that you do, and I really appreciate your focus on improving the quality of lives of women and their family.